in perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct, right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Roy Carter.
A Viking is in the time.
He gets inside, well inside.
In any way that you can see a spiky grin. Listening to the skin, you're not really behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
I'm Andy.
And I'll do a quick check. Yes, we are still the reigning premiers.
We are indeed, and we will be for at least 9 more months.
I know. I must say that we talked on our last show about how the normal off-season life cycle doesn't really apply when you're the premiers, and I'm happy to confirm that my appetite for Richmond-related content remains insatiable.
I actually cracked open the Geelong game, the Geelong final, last Friday night.
Much as you would a 20-year-old bottle of red wine.
Indeed. I actually had quite a good offer to do something else, but I decided to spend it alone with my dearly beloved finals victory against Geelong.
Mm.
And the emotional impact was still pretty strong, as I said on Twitter. When Townsend kicked the opening goal, I double fist pumped and, you know, did the big bicep flex with a proper celebration. I felt the nerves in the third quarter when Cam Guthrie was shooting for goal for Geelong to hit the lead.
Bit of fist pump action at Vossi's goal?
Vossi's goal was huge, and just in hindsight, God, it was a big goal. Felt the goosebumps in the second quarter when our pressure was incredible. And of course, for me, the goal of the match was I believe it was Dusty to Jack to Prestia over the top. I apologize if I missed someone, but just before the end of the third quarter that gave us the 2-goal lead. They're all special moments. And the one thing that came back to me is that the Cochin goal, which we all love watching the replay, the game was already over. It was a beautiful piece of skill, but, you know, it was more, it was fun because it was Cochin, but it wasn't actually relevant to the game.
No, it was the cherry on top. It wasn't the actual cake.
Indeed. It'll never get old.
I know. So in saying that my, appetite for Richmond-related football is limitless, I must say that I did click on the link showing the footage from the AFLX practice game, and I mean the nicest thing that I can say about it is that I used to quite enjoy circle work and football training, like you know, going round and round the oval, limited contested work, lots of running. Like that was pretty good fun. That's all it reminded me of. I'm not really excited about it at all.
No, I'm over that. But in 2 weeks from Saturday, we have the proper preseason competition starting, which I am, of course, interested in because it's something, and we'll talk about that a bit later. But Nick, sort of one of the big pieces of news that happened between our last two podcasts is Ben Griffiths retired.
I know, Ben Griffiths, he's been an idiosyncratic, tantalising, often frustrating presence. And look, he went out the way he played his entire career.
Teasing, slightly frustrating, and ultimately not delivering?
Yeah. And look, and all the best to him, I must say, that in term for him, you know, heading into the last year of his contract, and I have always thought that he was, even Richmond bias aside, I have always thought that he was perhaps the best of the current contemporary crop of AFL players to have a crack at making it in the NFL. Like he is a really special talent when he kicks the ball, and he's got a scholarship to a really big time American college.
He has. Cochin repeatedly has described him as a lover, not a fighter player, which was maybe a nice way of saying something that we probably have all observed. That bless him, he perhaps lacked the requisite. In fact, he definitely lacked the requisite intensity to be an AFL to reach his potential as an AFL footballer. But, Nick, he's going to the USC, University of Southern California, on a football scholarship. I know he's got a girlfriend, but he'll have plenty of opportunities to develop his full potential as a lover.
Yeah, and look, his concussion-wise, you know, nobody can ever be... It's not his fault that he's prone to concussions. I mean, for a long and beautiful kick, he was incredibly frustrating as a shot for goal. You know, he's... You know, if you think about his best was incredible. Like, I'm not sure. I think in terms of raw talent, he's our best key forward since Richo, which is no knock against Jack. But you know, Jack, you can't say that Jack hasn't maximised his available talent. Whereas, you know, Griffiths is. He was 200 centimetres tall with a big leap, could kick the ball a mile. Like there's nothing he couldn't do, and yet there wasn't very much that he could do on a reliable basis.
Well, there wasn't that much he did do. He had great moments. Don't get me wrong. We praised him many times on this podcast.
Yeah, and you think about it, like even, you know, early on in his career, the mark he took against Dustin Fletcher, to the end of his career, the mark he took against Collingwood, like he was capable of some incredible highlights. Highlights aside, I thought he really wasn't a bad tap ruckman.
No, he was definitely better than Ty. Mm. I will say, I don't want to talk too much about Ben Griffiths, but. My reaction, if I was Neil Baum, when Ben Griffiths came in December and announced his retirement, I felt a bit like Adam Sandler in The Wedding Singer when his fiance says he's going to leave him the day of the wedding. He says, yeah. Couldn't you have told me this yesterday? And it was a bit of a, couldn't we have discussed this in October? But I'm sure he had his reasons. But Nick, I just want to do a little bit of a contrarian opinion on Ben Griffiths.
Other than the one that he wasn't very reliable and didn't deliver on his talent?
Yeah, well, you know, he was a supremely talented guy. Mm. It would have been hard, and you know, he had the talent to be a borderline All-Australian. If you were to tally the net negative comments about Ty Vickery and Ben Griffiths, on Richmond internet sites, probably probably 5-1 more negative comments.
Yeah.
You look at them,
3 or 4-1 certainly, but yeah, it's a lot.
If you were to look at their career in hindsight, Ty Vickery played twice as many games, was clearly got more of the football.
Kicked a lot more goals.
Took a lot more goals, was more accurate, and also had more hit-outs per game. Would have had less contested marks, but yeah. It's funny how perception is not always... Now, I appreciate he was a slightly higher pick, but it's funny how fan perception is not always tied to actual output.
I've said it before, but I think part of the problem with Ty was that he got his hands on so many marks, and that's a skill on it of itself in being able to read the play, but, yeah, he just didn't hold them. It's funny that, you know... They're both gone. They're both, you know, 27, 28 years old, and they're both finished in the AFL.
Yeah, actually, Griff was only 26. Mm. Turns out we didn't need either of them. Anyway, they will be missed, both of them. They did have great moments for us.
I wanted to ask you, firstly, what your favourite Ben Griffiths moment was, but secondly, what do you think the actual implication on the field is?
My favourite moment is definitely actually what you mentioned before. I thought he was an underrated ruckman. I really liked his ruck work.
Mm. Very much playing to type for you.
And also maybe that game against St Kilda where he played across the half back line and got 20 possessions, because that was the moment where I thought he was going to make it. That he was finally discovering how to make the ball. And what was yours before we go on to what it matters?
Oh, the big mark that he took against Sydney 2016 to to help win us the game. That was a big moment.
He took some good contested marks down the line, no doubt. And that was one thing he did that Ty didn't. What it matters is that we don't have an option now to change into, unless Moore really comes on, to a more traditional forward structure with playing a second forward who's also a second ruck. Because there is no one else who really, unless you're sort of believing that Hammer's going to get his body right and he's still not doing any contested work at training. I think that option is now gone. So we've lost one of our possible plan Bs and we're stuck with our plan A, which we're well set up to continue the plan A, which is one tall and lots of smalls.
Mm.
We've drafted more smalls. So it's not the end. We're certainly plan A has got a lot of depth to it, but I think we've lost a plan B. We have lost our plan B.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. Plan A is what it is. I think plan B probably is as it was this year when Jack got injured and we played the two ruckmen with an anchor forward. That's probably what we'd go to next. So you look at VFL's form from last season, and me more than anyone in the world knows that key forward VFL form is unreliable. But Ben Griffiths played 10 games in the VFL and failed to make the best once, whereas Callum Moore made the best 5 times in his 17 games last year, including one game where he had the most goal assists on record for a VFL game, which admittedly is only 7 years of games, but still, I think he's pretty close. And if you're really desperate after that, while I'd stand by the analysis that Noah Bolter is destined to be a key back, apparently he's been training with the forwards. So I think that is just a reflection of a desperate lack of depth.
Mm. I think it depends on what you're talking about. I think they wouldn't voluntarily go to the no Jack line, but you know, it's something obviously we've done before, so it is a proven plan. I think the Moore plan, I agree with you that that's far more, I actually think that's a better chance of happening than Hammer and Knack playing successfully together, for multiple reasons. But it is still, it's one of the things we'll talk about in the preseason that needs to be tested. Because Moore is obviously his one game of AFL football was very early on, and
he came into the AFL as a 19-year-old and he was still raw when he came in, and the knock was his ability to read the play. And look, you even see that in the VFL. He was inconsistent in the VFL, but his best is clearly of AFL standard. He's lightning fast. There's something to work with there. But yeah, he's actually him and Shai Bolton are the two players I'm most interested in seeing in preseason.
Well, you sort of jumped ahead to our preseason, which was how we were going to finish. But do you want to just talk about the preseason, which said 2 weeks from the weekend. The two biggest, the male that has been strongest, and we've had spies, Richmond Tiger Talk spies at, preseason training camps. The two strongest male on trading the house down is, Nick Vlostone and Broad. Vlossie's been playing across the half back line. So, you know, great. But that's not going to be a big change, but that's going to be just business as usual. Thank God, because, you know, if last year proved anything, as a half forward flank, Vossing
makes a great defender.
Exactly. At the end of his year was brilliant, as we know. And Broad, again, say the same thing. The whole year wasn't great, and obviously only had the shoulder injury and only came in late, but his final series was magnificent. And he, two of these three games, he was really important player for us. So, it's interesting, and we'll see Brody in round 4 of the VFL, most likely. And then round five of AFL.
He'll be in the preseason. Look, Jack.
That's the turning the house down. But I agree entirely that Shai Bolton is the one. He's the X factor. He's the one who looked like he could do something at AFL level. And he's the one I'm most hopeful for. Will have taken a leap.
Yeah. Look, I'm pretty excited about seeing Jack Graham with the full preseason under his belt. Like we've said before, he looks great in the footage. Jack Higgins, drafted having played a lot of his juniors in the forward pocket, moved into the midfield, just won a ton of football. In terms of fantasy points, which, you know, useful, not the be-all and end-all, but he is the most productive junior that Champion Data has ever tracked in terms of his junior career. Like, he knows how to win a football. He's come third in a recent time trial, which is, again, that he's coming in pretty fit. And again, I think he's a midfielder. He's apparently matched up against Dusty in a scratch match, and yeah. So I think maybe
as you'd expect, Dusty did hand his ass to him, but that's
he did that to a lot of better credentialed players. I just think that maybe if he'd come in as a forward pocket, he might have had a chance to. I think playing in the midfield is a more demanding position.
Yeah, so maybe the six to eight spots.
Yeah,
and you're competing against the best players on the team.
Yeah, so maybe he won't have a chance to as much to make an impact early. But yeah, I'm really encouraged by him, and I think he's going to look good in preseason. And I think the circle work nature of AFLX is probably going to suit him.
This podcast is far too much talk on AFLX. Let's talk about women's football defensive tactics instead. But I will say I
think we've timed it reasonably well. But coming in 2020, I really think a lot of these. I'm hoping the AFL's got its act together and they've got these growing pains out of the way, because it is. It is all the things that you don't like about AFL house on display at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did it the wrong way. I think they've got the NFL and the AFL, the leagues that we think are fundamentally right, they do well run. They do tweak the rules all the time to make them more attacking, because coaches do play boring football. But putting a memo 2 weeks into the season. Also, you know what we forgot, Nick, and I was reading this in the Conrad Marshall bar. Book. The AFL completely changed the holding the ball interpretation in round three of last year's season.
Oh.
So we sort of, underneath the sort of everything in women's AFL women gets sort of interpreted through a different lens. But the AFL do this kind of high-handed stuff all the time.
Some of the changes are good. I think the change to not reward people for deliberately initiating head-high contact was a good one, but they have made the holding the ball rule impossible to consistently apply.
Anyway, next we could debate what's a catch in the NFL. I agree on all that, and back to the team. And it'll be really interesting to see whether our Baker's got some talent.
He's got a bit of love from preseason matches.
And he's older than your typical draftee, you know, Stengel. There's a lot of hungry young guys there who will be snapping at the heels of, you know, our four main mosquitoes. And Rioli is probably not going to, may not be right for round one, so there's automatically a stop there.
Opportunity
so
that, there.
That'll be fascinating.
Because I need more hobbies. I checked. So 2013, Robbie Nahas was by far the smallest player on the list. These days, he would have five players who are both shorter and lighter than he is.
Well, good stat.
Yeah, it's a mosquito fleet, right?
Yeah, and one thing interesting reading the going back to the Conrad Marshall book about preseason is how much last year, like the club internally, and I think we talked about it too, I know we did, Corey Ellis, you know, how important he is and how talented he is, and if he takes the step, how valuable he'd be to the team. That didn't happen. But some of this talk is again this year, and it's just a reminder the kid does have talent.
He does have talent. Yeah. Look, one of my other off-season things have been looking up, you know, who really did make an impact, in the VFL and who didn't. Like Ben Lennon's delisting makes a lot of sense when you see that he's only made the best twice in 20 VFL games, more than 20 VFL games over the year, whereas both Corey Ellis and Jaden Short really finished off the year well. I am looking forward to that Conrad Marshall book. I'm currently reading the Footy Almanac book about Richmond, which is deeply enjoyable. But yeah, Conrad Marshall's next.
Yeah, if only it's only some thoughtful personal bite for you.
Exactly.
So just about that book. A friend of mine bought me a copy, and it's much appreciated if you're listening. But he got Trent Conchon to write something on the inside when Trent had a beer or two. And
that time of the year again?
Yeah, well, you know, it's pre-season. He's allowed one beer. I won't repeat what he wrote because Conchon has so studiously cultivated his vanilla public image. But let's just say it's one of the most interesting things that I've heard Conchon say.
Would you say it's interesting in an absolute or relative terms?
Bit of both. But basically what he says, and I won't repeat word for word, is forget about last year. We're going to do it all again in 2019. And reading it gives me goosebumps. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And fun book. A couple of things, Nick, just from it, and we're about to talk about the Champion Data Prospectus as well. But one of the things I sort of talk about, the thinking going into, it's well worth reading. But the one sort of I actually quite enjoy, you know, the stories of the volunteer boot starter and people like that, you know, you don't always hear about. And they're surprisingly good. And, stories of all the players and the little things the coaches go through, they're all fun. But they talk a bit about the process of, the high pressure tackling game plan, and adopting that. And they talk a bit about how they are really emphasizing it. But the one frustrating thing for me is, you know, for 6 years we did it one way and then we make this big change and it was obvious from the first preseason game. And it was the sort of, I always wanted to know what was the sort of, they mentioned that they decided to change it, but like, what was the process that led to them? What making was a revolutionary change? You know, if you'd watched that 2017 final series had been in a coma since 2016, you would have presumed we'd sack the coach because it was just a different style
and replaced all the players.
A lot of them. Dusty was the same. And Rance was the same. And Jack. I just love to know, what was the moment. It must have been a lot of soul searching. And it doesn't, look, it's a nerd thing because, you know, not everyone knows off the top of their head where their team ranks in the tackling statistics. But, you know, it's a fascinating question. It is covered to some extent in the book, but
one of the strange things about this season is, as I said, had a limitless capacity to watch Richmond games from 2017. And how much that this is the complete opposite of the 2016 experience. I went the whole off-season without the slightest desire to watch Richmond games because that 2016 team was close to unwatchable. Like, I'm sure there was maybe a light bulb moment, but if you'd...
It would have been fun games, I'm sure. Fun quarters.
You've got Neil Baum, Blake Carousella, Justin Lepich come in. You just can't help but think that there were some pretty frank conversations that what was served up in 2016 wasn't acceptable.
This is what we've been saying about you in opposition research. The one thing it didn't make me think is, and move on, but is, you know, in most clubs and most sports in the NFL, Dimmel would have been sacked. And you wonder how many other coaches could have been, like, you know, we were sort of on the extreme end of patience. And, you know, there might have been these other great coaches who got sacked too early and then never got their chance. And, you know, how differently Dimmel would look at history. But you just think of all the other guys who, like Dimmel, were probably great managers, you know, didn't quite find the right formula for success, maybe stuck to it too long out of loyalty or whatever. But then, you think, I was thinking of great NFL assistant coaches, who maybe could have been Super Bowl winning had they had a more patient ownership. Anyway.
Well, Bill Belichick only succeeded on the second go, you know.
Exactly. And so did, how many guys Seahawks coach. Second go? Yeah, exactly. And very, in AFL especially, you rarely, rarely get them. The Seahawks coach, Pete Carroll, also sacked multiple times.
How does Nank come across in the book?
Hasn't been discussed. I haven't finished it yet, to be honest. I felt a bit amazed. They're very positive about Steve Morris. You always knew he was positive behind the scenes, but I did feel a bit bad.
What are the things you said?
Look,
going through the off-season news, I mean, we should mention Dan Richardson moving on. I think the extent to which maybe his role wasn't essential as it was is illustrated by the fact that he hasn't been replaced. But I do think it's worth pointing out how much, for all his faults, he did preside over an era where, despite a lot of other clubs in a similar position losing key players, we haven't lost a single player that we really wanted to keep through the time that he was in charge. So he deserves some credit to that, and, you know, wish him personally all the best, even if I hope that his time with Essendon is spectacularly unsuccessful.
Yeah, look, you know, good on him. He certainly raved the premiership, bro, and good on, he clearly took the demotion with good humour, and he's got up with probably a big fat pay rise.
Yeah, you never heard a peep about it publicly, and that's a credit to him.
Yeah, the Yaron and Hammer trade, he wasn't the only person involved in it, but he does our trading, you know, the much better trading of 2016 did coincide with Neil Barmer arriving. Now, those trades can't happen overnight, and they were, I'm sure, partly set up by Dan, but there was, if you go through our past episodes, there was some pretty frank feedback about some of his decisions. So mixed feelings, but, there's no point in speaking ill of God. Oh, and he was terrible in the media early on. Now, people are allowed to learn from their mistakes, but sort of making that big fish comment, it was sort of the original sin that took him a long time to dig out for him. And arguably that comment built the pressure where they were more desperate to land a big one later.
I know, yeah. It was a bit of an own goal. Good luck to him.
He was the 2IC in a football department that won a premiership.
Exactly. Look, other recent, very recent news, the free agent to be Dylan Grimes re-signed for 3 years. Toby Nankervis got an extra year on his deal for the end of...
Hang on, I was just going to say, North lost their eighth free agent target, who are planning to make the face of the club.
Yeah. And sadly, it seems we won't be getting two top 10 draft picks in the upcoming draft because we re-signed Jack Graham.
Yeah, he's sticking around and no go-home factor. I heard a nice anecdote about him that apparently he went back to Adelaide and he hadn't watched the grand final at all. And he went to a pub with his girlfriend and the game was on TV. So he just sat there quietly in the pub watching himself battle Roy Sloan to a draw. Or even actually, he probably won on points in a pub in Adelaide, and no one bothered him. Sounds pretty sweet to me.
That does sound good. I would, having watched the grand final a number of times, I would recommend watching it and just focusing on the Sloan versus Graham matchup. That's pretty entertaining.
The interesting thing about the Nat contract was he got an extra year. He already had 2 years left, and now he's got it's a long contract. So I don't know if we've upped his pay or whatever we've done, but look, Nank can never play another game for Richmond.
I think he would have been on. Love him. Yeah. Look, he was a fringe guy coming in, so I don't imagine his contract wasn't a huge one, so I reckon they would have sweetened it with the extra year, but I'd expect, and Grimes got 3 years after this one, so you'd expect that it's part of the list management strategy is you trade off the big dollars for a bit more certainty.
Yeah, and perhaps we sort of, they're both premiership heroes. They're not going anywhere anytime soon. So.
Well, all three of them, premiership heroes.
They are indeed. All three of them were great in the final series.
Love it. Do you want to talk about the AFL prospectus?
Yeah. So do you want to just talk? I thought we'd just mention a few things that stood out to both of us. And one of the very first things that stood out to me, Nick?
That bit where they said we were premiers?
Yeah, indeed. And look, honestly, the bit at the front normally is really interesting, but this title was just dull because, if you haven't worked out what the Richmond 2017 team was all about, you're just not paying attention. We're good at pressure. Forward half pressure. Yes, we got. So, and Champion Data these days, because they've got the podcast, it's less surprising than it was a few years ago where you'd have all these tactical statistics that you hadn't heard all year. But Nick, my first sort of point that I went, oh, that's interesting. And I thought of you straight away is last year we were 16th in shot at goal accuracy. So one of your pet bugbears, we were quite bad at.
Yeah, genuinely bad. I was struck that our opponents were bad at it as well, which is something we picked up during the year. Like, we were very good at getting the opposition to take shots from relatively poor locations. But yeah, we were really frustrating kicking for goal, and should have, on the champion data stat that measures what you should have kicked given the kicks you were taking. Yeah. Yeah, there's some room for improvement, to say the least.
Yeah. A few other things that sort of pointed out wasn't immediately clear to me originally was, this isn't less surprising, where we were second in the AFL in ground ball gets in the forward 50, which makes sense when you're playing a lot of shorter, agile players. We got a lot of the balls in the forward half a lot again because we had an effective forward press, a lot of pressure on. Our pressure differential was fourth in the AFL, so very high. One thing that was interesting is our centre bounce clearances, we were second in the AFL.
I noticed that as well, yeah. Yeah, that surprised me because our overall clearance numbers and, Nank wasn't winning a lot of clearances, but yeah, I think that's a... That's dusty in the first instance, but yeah, a little. I think second half of the year, a little bit of Postier and Cochin and a real team effort there.
Yeah, I think because the centre square it's 4-on-4, so if you have one, if you have the best player on the ground, his dominance will be more pronounced when there's less players around. But I think there has to be a bit of love going for Nank there, that he's off the ball work, his physical ability once the ball hits the ground is very good. Now, is there anything else that stood out to you on the overall team stats?
Yeah, that's true. I was struck actually by how good we were when the ball. I mean, we were good when the ball hit the ground pretty much anywhere, but also in defence. I think I knew that instinctively because when Adelaide got a couple of clearance goals in the first quarter, there was a bit of, oh, that's not quite right. That doesn't normally happen. We were third in the AFL in defensive ground ball gets as well. And plus, on top of that, we were number one in the AFL for one-on-one marking contests in defensive 50. So, you know, nobody was better at bringing it to ground, and we were extremely good at winning it when it came to the ground. So, yeah, good combination.
Exactly. And just one other thing about the... I've just lost my train of thought on that, but I was also going to mention that statistically, we're a pretty good team, but at the MCG, statistically, we're the best team in the AFL.
Mm.
So, you know, we're time and forward half differential, points against our defence, all best in the AFL. We managed to maximise play at the MCG. Lucky the finals are played there. So, it goes to show how important, if you're looking at our chances of repeating, which of course I'm already analysing, home field advantage will be important.
I know. And yeah, the Raw website is a bit hit and miss, but yeah, there was a very explosive article criticising, contrasting Geelong and Richmond, that Geelong's stoppage-heavy game dependent on playing at Cadinia Park versus the Richmond speed at the MCG. Well worth a read.
Yeah, the best bit about that, it was written by a Geelong supporter.
I know.
And, I actually felt their pain a bit, because someone who's sort of suffered a bit through earlier years of thinking the coach is too defensive, and, you know, this Geelong supporter was feeling the same way about Chris Scott.
Hmm. Yeah.
Now, there has been a bit of talk in the media about how many elite players we've got and how good the list is, and whether the 8th best list. Look, it's very much of a function of game style. A few years ago, when we were playing that high possession style in 2014, our list looked awesome. It was one of the best in the AFL. And we never won a final. Like, it's not, you know, it's a rough guide, so people don't need to get so...
I know. It's just, and some,
our game plan is not some, individual player some friendly position, anymore.
Some positions, like they, on that measure, all positions are of equal value, and we know that's not the case. And another problem, you know, they're just not capturing defensive metrics very well. Yeah. That Daniel Menzel rated as elite, and yet was dropped for a final. Like,
exactly.
There's something not quite right there. One thing they did pick up on, they did absolutely love Nick Flostone's last month to 6 weeks of the season. So they're very much singing with choir on that one.
Yeah, they watched it. So just while we're on that, a few other player things that I sort of marked out that are both positive and negative about our guys. Now, this isn't definitive. It's just things that I hadn't quite realised. Just a few things on Asprey. And the past 2 years he's defended, he's in the top 10 for defending most one-on-ones. Amongst the top 50 people who've defended the most one-on-ones, he's got the 11th best win rate. So he's in the top 20% roughly of the best AFL defenders. So that's probably, he's underrated. And he's elite for intercept marks.
He's the ideal number two defender because he's good enough to be a number one defender.
Exactly. Another one is Shai Bolton, who, you know, obviously was very good in the VFL, kicked lots of goals, we knew that, but in the AFL, his pressure wasn't great. So, you know, he's sort of known for the tackling. He has put a few spectacular tackles on, but, yeah, that's an obvious way he needs to get better to play senior football regularly.
Yeah, and actually, I looked at it, he and Tyson Stengel both kicked... actually kicked goals at the same rate in the VFL and kicked a lot of them. And Stengel, even more so when he played AFL, just had trouble generating that relentless, consistent pressure. And the opposite of that, Jason Castagna, extremely effective in creating turnovers that led to goals.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think they quite captured the Castagna story. I was actually hoping for a bit more about what his marking contesting did, which I still think just from watching tape is a very underrated part of his game. But
I thought newly re-signed Dylan Grimes. It was they did a decent job, but it's hard. Like North Melbourne, it would be pointless for North Melbourne to sign Dylan Grimes because having a Swiss Army knife defender is no good if you're hemorrhaging goals to the opposition's number one forward. But as a as a complementary piece that makes a good defence great, yeah, he's really good. And that comes through a bit in the stats, but maybe they still haven't got it fully.
Yeah, I well said. One that I did catch, that Nathan Broad was rated elite for intercepted possessions and spoils. So, you know, is the Nathan Broad story continues to grow.
Yes, for reasons good and bad.
Oh, yeah, sorry. No pun intended. They love butts, but I think that's no surprise, and you know I love butts. Oh, God, no pun intended again. Josh Caddy's defensive work.
That was a bit of a surprise.
Better than expected, and his set shot for goals was pretty awful, as were you. And as we had sort of remarked on Riley several times, that he came to Richmond to play more in the midfield, and he got exactly the same in Richmond as he did in Geelong. So
yeah.
It's clearly what he's good at. The two premiership coaches have played him exactly the same way.
I know. Look, Dion Prestia, they noted. I don't think they quite got how much better he was in the second half of the year at the first half of the year. Like, overall, his numbers were down on previous work, but I think that's also a different role in a much better team.
I would say, if you haven't read it, don't really doubt on Prestia. Like, it was a very negative write-up, and it was his worst season since 2012. The positive take from that is, if he gets... You know, I agree his role changed slightly, but there's also a lot of potential. He's clearly a better AFL player and was better as we saw in the finals. And, you know, I think actually his late season, it was a pretty short burst where he actually was playing quite good football, and we've sort of forgotten some of the earlier stuff. But if he plays to his previous or career average in his prime, we're going to get a lot better Dion Prestia next year. You know, we were winning a lot of games last year with Dion not at his best. So there's some real upside there, actually. So it was quite negative, but I took that as a good sign because we know he can do better.
Well, and we certainly know that he can kick some match-sealing goals.
He certainly can. Trent Cotchin, interesting, like, it's not a big surprise, but like, the hard numbers do support that he was his best season since 2012. He was getting a shed ton of contested ball, lots of meters gained, you know, the chipping sideways conservative Cotchin went away. We knew that from watching. It's nice to have the stats backed up. If you don't know by now that the advanced metrics love Shane Edwards, you haven't been listening to the podcast.
Deeply love Shane Edwards. Yeah, some love for Daniel Rioli as well. He's tracking well on the way to a really good career.
Yep.
And don't
Brendan Ellis.
Don't think I haven't been. Again, desperate things we do in the off season, seeing how many goals and how many times Morris Rioli Jr. appears, playing senior football in the Northern Territory competition.
Indeed. Brendan Ellis proving that how much our position, proving one of the quirks of statistics. He's gone from a player who was, when he was considered a midfielder, was always below average for contested possession. He had a slightly better contested possession year, but he only went up from 5.8 to 6.6. But because he switched position to defender, he's now in he averaged the fifth most contested possession of any general defender in the AFL. So does that make sense, Nick, that he's now well above average in contested possession because he went up slightly and he switched position?
Which did confirm one of my biases I always thought about how certain players in very good opposition teams were overrated because they got to play a complementary role. It's nice to see Richmond players benefit from that as well.
Yeah, and he records above average kick rating despite what you sometimes questions to sometimes put about his kicking on forums, and which is a nice counterpart to Sean Griggs, who, as we discussed last year, and also Herald Sun article about his kicking is on the adjusted kick metric.
Not so much. Yeah, look, the write up. Yeah,
it's safe to say he's in the bottom quarter of the AFL.
Yeah,
amongst his peers.
The write-ups on the draftees were sort of... There wasn't a lot of surprises there, like you know, Patrick Naish having a low contested ball rate, but also being number one for meters gained at the under 18s, you know, sort of telling us the story we already knew. But Liam Baker, like,
just on Naish, apparently, that even at training at AFL level, his kicking really does stand out as elite.
Yeah. Good to know. And I reckon VFL watchers are going to enjoy him, but yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure we're going to see much seniors next year. He's very light. Liam Baker.
I was going to point
little,
him out.
Little bit of a Moneyball pick. Number one for ground ball gets in the waffle last year as a teenager. That's as a teenager that frankly looks still like a child. So I think that was one where. The stats played a part in his selection.
Yeah, and I made the point that actually he had the stats to get drafted last year. Mm. So yeah, I'm excited by him because this is the guys that they often talk about like this often do make it to AFL football and play decently. I don't think. I mean, what can be said about Dustin that hasn't already been said? Except that the point was. His role completely changed between 2016 to 2017.
Absolutely,
he went from 40% of his disposals in the forward half to 62% in 2017. So that's like when you think how many possessions he gets, that's a huge shift.
That's a lot. Yeah.
So, but you know, aside from that, he's all world and leads the AFL and all the key offensive metrics.
That emotional feeling that when you see him one out against a defender, yep, he's the best in the AFL at that.
We will, watching Richmond will be much sadder day because we've just spent the last, you know, essentially for the last 7 years, if you turned up as a Richmond supporter to one of our games, you got to see Dusty. And he'd do something amazing almost every game. It's going to be a sad day when he eventually leaves us.
Mm. Yep, lucky he's on an enormous contract.
Yep, Tiger for life, hashtag. Interesting that Camden McIntosh is clearly the defensive mid and Sean Grigg is the attacking one. His tackling efficiency was the sixth highest of any wingman. So,
it fits what you see, like that, you know, even the physical pressure of the finals, he was totally up for that. He is a big, strong, athletic boy.
Nank, of the top 20 ruckmen, he had the lowest win rate in hitouts, his hitouts to advantages and, of course, his score involvements and intercept marks. Oh, actually, his intercept marks and intercept possessions were elite. So, you know, I think we know. It's no surprise, but we know what Nank's good at. He's good at everything that happens after the hitout.
I know Champion Data's always loved Basher Hawley, and that very much continued. And it's actually looking forward to the year ahead. Like Grigg and Hawley are the only two premiership players that are out of contract. You know, Shai Bolton's probably the one that I'm worried about, but you know, it's not. I'm pretty confident it'll get done. It really. These are good times to be a Richmond supporter.
Yeah, indeed. Jack is ridiculously consistent. Mm-hmm. We knew that. You already mentioned the Callum Moore stats, which were very promising, and the Great White Hope at the other end of the ground, Garthwaite.
Garthwaite, yeah.
Defended a lot of ball and did it well. And you know, Nick, I'm on the Garthwaite.
Well, we're both
Garthwaite.
And I think the step for him is, you know, he did a really good job defending his man last year, just winning a bit more football. I think if you can see him get from about 10 possessions to about 13, 14 possessions, then yeah, that'd be really nice.
And despite his inverted commas unconventional kicking style, his kicking rating is just fine.
Mm. Yeah.
Anything else from
it? Oh no, just we've talked a lot of positives there. You know, in terms of Sammy Lloyd absolutely dominated as a midfielder. Again, we sort of knew that, but yeah, he had some pretty eye popping stats as well, but in terms of fringe players, it also, you know, some of the write-ups do, you know, Marby Achol, Reece Conker, Sean Hampson. In terms of players on the bubble for this year, they're not hard to see.
No, the Reece Conker write-up was not kind. The Hammer thing, I mean, I think the best case for Hammer is, despite that write-up in the paper, is he gets fit by the start of the season, and if Nat goes down, he can be our second ruck. I think he's competing with Solder to be second ruck. But, you know, if he does better than that, great. But as I said, he's not doing contested work at training yet.
Yeah, that's the thing. Look, we've done 50 minutes, which is pretty good for the start of February.
Indeed, I haven't even started. I haven't even talked about how I've been analysing what our chances of repeating are. Pretty good, in short.
Paying $7.
but it's very dependent on certain things. But you know, you could say that with all premierships. I don't particularly so with us, but that's for a future podcast.
Well, it is, and in terms of things to, I'm loath to mention AFLX again, but. Really, the one thing that Richmond supporters should be hoping for from it is no injuries.
Couldn't agree more.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.